I'm delighted now to welcome Victor Alvarez. He is a musician. He is leader of the group Sabor, which plays Cuban street music here in Santa Fe. And he is featured in the documentary One Among Thousands, which is showing this coming Wednesday, January 13th, at 7 and 9 o'clock at the Jean Cocteau Theater here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having us. Thank you.
Now, you were born and raised in Cuba, but you left at the age of 13.
Correct.
Not with your mother. You were sent away. Tell us that story.
Yes. Well, we were actually called Peter Pans. There were children that left. The parents got them out of Cuba to get them away from the government there, the form of government. And for one reason or another, kids could actually go out, but not the parents. So I was just one of them. And my mother, my dad passed away in Cuba, so my mom got me out.
Now, your dad passed away in Cuba, and yes. He was a supporter of Castro.
Yes, he was.
But your mother
was not. Correct. Yeah, and she was very adamant about me not growing in that regime. And she got me out. This was in 1966. I think I was like 5 hours old at the time.
Now, you 13. Were 13 years old.
Yeah.
It was 1966,
yeah.
And this is a tremendous shock to any young person not fully grown to suddenly be in a new country. Where did you go first?
Oh, it was horrific. I went to Spain, and I was met there by a priest, and I stayed with a priest there for about a year. And he found a foster family for me to come to the United States with, so that I could claim my mother as an only son, and Castro then would let her out. And it happened that way. I got to the United States. I actually got to the United States in 1966, late 1966, and my mom got here a couple of years later.
And where were you?
The foster family that I was with was settled in New Jersey. And so I stayed with them there, and when my mom came, we stayed there in New Jersey for a few years.
Now, as a child, you were already a musician. What yes. instrument did you play?
my mom was my teacher, actually. She played piano for name bands there in Cuba. And so I played guitar. She taught me how to play guitar. And violin and the laúd, which is a Cuban instrument, 10-string Cuban instrument, that was my absolute favorite.
Now, the laúd, what family of instruments is that, so that people can visualize it?
Sure, it comes from the lute. It's actually an Arabic origin instrument, and but it metamorphosed when it went to Spain, and then it had another transformation when it went to Cuba. I mean, we really messed it up. We put frets on it, you know, we made it flat, and you know, and but it's a fun instrument to play, and very melodic, but it's also very soft. And my friend Barbarito Torres, who is the genius of laúds, and I have so much admiration for him, you know, argues with him, why don't you play the laúd anymore? All the recordings don't hear a single laúd. And I have to tell you the story, because it's quite funny. What happened when I came to the United States and my mom finally came, we looked for a laúd, and because it was my absolute favorite, but we couldn't find any in 1968 when she came here. And there are no laúds anywhere, especially in New Jersey. Laúd, you don't know. So she recommended that I play the mandolin because it has 8 strings and it's kind of like that. And I wound up picking that up and started playing that. And I said, it's tuned like the violin, so I was there. I knew how to play it. And now I prefer it. I own 2 laúds. I had 3 and I gave one away. I own 2 and I don't touch them. I just prefer the mandolin.
So you play the mandolin, and mandolin can easily be incorporated into traditional Cuban song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, when I was in Cuba in July and I played with all these bands, they were all pretty amazed about the mandolin. And of course, they know what a mandolin is, but they have never seen it really used the way I use it, with a tumbao and the syncopations and playing solos and outliving to, you know, with a mandolin. And it amplifies really well, so it fights right in there with all the other instruments, you know.
So you then were in the United States. Eventually your mother came. You lived in New Jersey. What was your life like here culturally and musically?
was very difficult culturally, because at that time in New Jersey, it was a difficult place for Spanish people to be. But also, we were broke as dogs. Let me just be quite frank about it. And so, but with a guitar, I had a guitar and the mandolin, I'd go out, and even though I was quite young, I could make a lot of money just playing places for tips and stuff and bars and stuff like that. But you go in and, you know, it's just a little Spanish guy, and people were not, you know, in the beginning they were saying, oh yeah, all right, let's see what this guy can do. But once I started playing, they see almost like a different side, you know, a different thing, and I wound up making a bunch of friends and they give me money. And so I helped, that's how I helped around the house, yeah.
And so then you decided that that was your life path, that you would be a musician.
Well, I knew that, I think, from cue. I think that I was kind of focused that way from a really young age. There was no question that I was going to do anything else. I was pretty much assumed. I never remember discussing with my mother anything other than that.
So did you then go and get musical training?
Well, I did that in Cuba. You know, there you start. You know, my mom was, you know, a pianist, so she was very rigid, really, really, really rigid in teaching and making sure that. So I started solfeggio and theory. I hated it from a young age. Music was okay, but the theory, blah. And so I started doing that since I was really, really young, and especially singing the notes and stuff like that, then applying it to the instruments. Yes, but when I came here, she continued giving me lessons. Most of the teachings I've gotten in music were from her.
So you were really family taught, and then you started playing with other musicians. Were they, at the time, you know, in New Jersey, back east, other Cuban musicians or Caribbean people?
Caribbean, yeah. There were a couple of young guys from Puerto Rico that we got together and we started a trio, and we started doing stuff like Los Panchos and stuff like that, and I love that stuff, you know, with three per harmony and just having a lot of fun in that way. I think that that music is so beautiful, you know, and still very rhythmic, and I started playing with those guys, and then I moved down from there with different people. And you know how it is in music, you know, especially when you're young. Every year is an adventure. You know, you go do something else. Opportunities come and you take them and you move.
How did you end up in New Mexico?
I actually went to Texas. Well, being in New Mexico is a wifey thing. It's not.
A wifey thing?
A wifey thing, yeah. I had no. If you had told me, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that I was going to be in New Mexico, I would have laughed, you know, because from New Jersey, I moved to Texas, and I lived there about 20 years, and I had a big band there, you know, La Express. We traveled all over the world with that.
When you say a big band?
It's a 16-piece band, and, well, it was 15 and me. And so I had, obviously a horn section, and I really, really enjoyed that band because I got to do all the arrangements, and it was just a hot band, and we did a little bit of everything, but we did it in a Latin style, like even swing. When we did swing, which I love Cole Porter and his music, and so I used to do a lot of his music, jazz. Still had a really good Latin flavor to it. We traveled all over the world. We had floor shows, and we even played at the North Pole.
At the?
At North Pole.
The North Pole.
Yeah, in Thule and Sonderstrom. I forget what year that was, but I took the band up there, and we had a floor show because it's the North Pole and it's the Arctic. I brought some young ladies to dance Hawaiian music, a dance troupe, and a fire dancer. and we did like a Samoan thing and a Hawaiian thing. And
who were you playing for?
There were some Inuits, but there's a lot of Americans that live up there, and we had I kind of questioned myself what I had done when they greeted us at the airport with parkas that had X's on the back that are neon in case you fall in the snow, the helicopter can find you. Oh my God, I made a mistake. You know, I think sunrise was like 4 months later. You know.
We're talking to Victor Alvarez, and the documentary is called One Among Thousands, meaning you, one of many thousands of Cubans who left Cuba.
Yes.
And now just this past year returned. And the documentary is showing at the Jean Cocteau this Wednesday evening, the Jean Cocteau Theater on Montezuma Street in Santa Fe. The DVD of this documentary also contains a CD of music called Three Phases of a Cuban Musician. And so this big band phase that you were just talking about is included on this.
Yes, yes. I have maybe 4 or 5 cuts of that on there.
Maybe we'll hear a little track of that
oh,
now.
Oh, that'd be wonderful, yeah.
So that was from Three Phases of a Cuban Musician, El Africano.
El Africano, yes. Yeah, that and that song, when I arranged that, I made the words in English, but still all the rhythm and everything is blatantly very Latin. Yeah, but it's fun because everybody can understand it.
So you continued your music through many phases, and I think one of the things that's hard for Cuban musicians, especially Cuban musicians during this long phase of political enmity between the two countries, between the U.S. and Cuba, it's something that Puerto Rican musicians didn't really have. They could always go home, you
sure.
know, but you couldn't really go home. And so maintaining that sabor, that flavor yeah. of your country, how did you do that? How do you...
What made it even more difficult was that the kind of Cuban music that I like is pretty obscure. The stuff that I really, really like is the really old stuff, and it's like the country music of Cuba. It's folk music, Cuban folk music, and it's a song, the real Cuban song, and the Nengong, which is very Afro-Cuban. And it's a music that you play in the streets. Well, that music was, now you can get it on the internet, I'm sure, but at the time, it was impossible, up to a few years ago, it was impossible to get. So all the music that I did was from memory, what I remembered. And it was one of the questions, and that has stuck with me that way now, even though I can listen to musicians that do that now on the internet and certain shows that are aired. But you're still not sure if... I wasn't 100% sure if I'm still doing it right, because sometimes you hear one thing and then you do another. And that was one of the questions that I posed to a couple of musicians when I went to Cuba, a couple of the band leaders down there, Septeto Manero and a couple of those guys. And I said, man, you heard me play. Am I doing it? And I was so touched, you know, that they said, Victor's in your blood. How can you not? You know, and that really made me feel good because I feared that maybe I wasn't, you know. I think everybody doubts themselves. Every artist always doubts themselves in some small way. And that was my big... Right.
Very much so. I mean, I thought it was very poignant in the movie when, on a couple of different occasions, you say, "Am I doing this right? Am I still?" Basically, you're asking, "Am I still Cuban?"
Right. Yes, I did. And you know, and the way they put it was so warming. You know, they said, it's in your blood. You're Cuban. You're home. You're home. And, oh, my God, that just really touched me. Inside, it was like two moments, two highs of the trip, where when the airplane pilot said that we were landing in Havana, it did something to me inside. And the other one was when those musicians said to me that my blood was Cuban and that I was home. Both those were definitely the highlights of the trip.
Why don't we hear some music now from Septeto Habanero?
Oh, yeah. Those guys are great.
And that's music of Septeto Habanero.
Yes. Yes, Septeto Habanero. They're an institution in Cuba.
Yeah. Now, there that kind of music really comes from not Havana itself, but from the eastern part of Cuba.
Yeah, from Oriente. But it was always played in Havana, but it wasn't accepted. And being that most of society was in Havana, you didn't hear that much of it. In Oriente, of course, you know, that's plantations and stuff like that, and, you know, things of that nature is much more rural. So people were really open to it. In Havana, back in the 20s, or up to the 20s, the Cuban song, which is a Septeto Habanero, that's all they do, and the kind of music that I play as well, was not accepted at all by society. It was looked upon as music of the streets, and they like danzones, the danzonete, you know, the more
white and more upper class types
absolutely.
Of music.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And Septeto was instrumental in bringing that forth and having it accepted. And now, of course, you know, a lot of people prefer it. So I'd rather listen to a song than a danzonete any day.
Yeah. Well, and then that film, The Buena Vista Social Club, gave so much international attention to the form of song.
Yes, absolutely.
One thing I was thinking about when watching this film, One Among Thousands, was that Cuban musicians they're certainly competitive with one another, and there's a lot of intensity there because the standards are so very high. But they're so gracious, and they're so warm, and they're so incredibly good at what they do.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, Cuba's very musical, and I think pretty much all the Caribbean islands are. I think everywhere is musical, except that in Cuba, you're focused in that direction, you know, with the government. For example, when I was there in Cuba, I had gotten a scholarship to go to a music school. So that's not an unusual thing. If kid wanted to be a musician, then you could, you know. And
the training is incredible.
The training is incredible. Oh, yes, top of the line. Top of the line. But your education is free, and you're helped to go in the direction you want to go in. And music is not viewed as a pastime. Just, we call it, we're playing music. And so a lot of the concept here is that music is something that you play. It's a play. It's not, you know, you should work and have, you know, it's not viewed as serious. There is serious, you know, music is very serious. And you're right, it can be very competitive, and there's that. But it's also a camaraderie in the music where no one really hoards it or, you know, share it. And people show you things, and it's assumed that if you know something and you can help somebody, you just do it, you know. And even as a kid in Cuba, most of the stuff that I do, that is the music of the streets, was taught to me by street musicians, by guys in the streets, and even musicians from other that would catch me stealing their licks. They would, you know, bring me in and show me the stuff, you know.
It's funny that you use the term, because you use this in the film, stealing. It's like, you know, is there such a thing as stealing music in a
sure.
society where it's people are so open and giving to each other musically?
Well, if they don't give it to you, you're stealing it. So, and so what I would do is, as a kid, I would stand outside establishments and see what they were doing, and then go mimic it. And copy those licks, so they wouldn't have cared. I mean, you know, but I certainly didn't ask,
right.
So I call it stealing. But in reality, I should say borrow. I was planning on giving them back.
Well, and the other thing that's very striking is that, whereas, you know, here in this country at this point, we're really almost choked by commercialism and commercial space. There's almost no place you can stand that's non-commercial outside of your own house.
Yeah.
There's no commerce there. And although that's not great for the economy in Cuba, socially and musically, it creates this incredible openness and cultural space for things to happen.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And if you look back, even the visual arts in Cuba a few years back, I think it's changing and you can see it, but we can correlate it to the visual arts in that artists were painting things not for money. It wasn't a commercial thing because it wasn't going to sell anywhere. It was going to hang in their house or a friend's house. This great painting or sculpture was not going to be sold. So they did it without the commercial aspect to it. And it's different. You can see the difference because they were really doing what they wanted to do. You can't help. So now going back to music, you can hear the same thing. Musicians in that era were playing. The music that was being written was really for the people and not in a commercial vein, because they were not going to make any money from it, you know. Now, of course, that's changing, but it's really funny to see how, because that happens to me even when I write a song, I'm thinking about how is that going to go over. And so it hinders you from really putting in what you have inside, because you're thinking of, oh man, is this going to be like this? Is this going to be accepted? Is this hip? Is this something that people are going to think is cool? You know, rather than, gee, this is how I really feel. You know, you got to be very conscious of that, I think, when you write in pain. Make sure that you do it for what's in your soul. Fortunately, commercialism is part of reality. You know, we gotta eat. And so,
we're talking to Victor Alvarez, and he's the musician leader of the group Sabor. Now, in the DVD, as we talked about before, One Among Thousands, the film that's going to be screening on Wednesday, you have a disc called Three Phases of a Cuban Musician. Now, we played the first phase a little while ago. What was the second phase?
The second phase was a madness that I went through there for a while in an acoustic vein. I wanted to do everything acoustic, and if I amplified it, I got equipment that amplified the acoustics specifically and not made it sound electric. And so in that phase, I did a lot of things with vocal harmonies and instrumental harmonies and with all acoustic instruments and the blend of steel strings with nylon strings and the upright bass. I insisted on using gut strings. Just a madness, you know, just a silliness that one goes through.
But why do you say it's silliness?
Well, because it is kind of silly, you know. So what? I mean, at the end of the day, so what? You know, it's all about the music. But you get these things in your head about that it has to be so, you know, it just has to be.
Well, it's
so
like people playing chamber music on the original instruments.
Okay, yes, right, exactly, yeah. That's exactly right, that's what it is.
Yeah, and then, you know, that has its... So let's hear a clip from one of those.
Oh, terrific, yeah.
Quiero que te vayas. falta, porque quieras o no, yo soy tu dueño. Quiero que te vayas por el mundo y quiero que conozcas mucha gente. Yo quiero que te des en otros labios para que me compares hoy como siempre. Si encuentras un amor que te comprenda y sientes que te quiere más que nadie, entonces yo daré la media vuelta y miré con el sol cuando muera la tarde. Entonces yo daré la media vuelta y miré con el sol cuando muera la tarde. Y sientes que te quiere más que nadie, entonces yo daré la media vuelta y miré con el sol cuando muera la tarde. Entonces yo daré la media vuelta y miré con el sol cuando muera la tarde. Haz porque yo quiero que te vayas.
And that was Media Vuelta. We're talking to Victor Alvarez. That was phase two of the three phases of Cuban music. What's phase three?
Phase three is what we're doing now. And what Savoy is doing, the street music. And so I recorded specifically for this some of Ernesto Lecuona, Cuban icon, his two of his songs, and also a compilation of songs of the streets that I made into one song. And it fits quite nicely. But it's a real, real, real street song, you know, and that you do at the bembes, you know, or the gatherings, musical gatherings of the streets, you know. Very informal, but you can close your eyes and you think you're there, all right? I do, anyway.
Right. So we're going to hear that in just a moment, but okay. Before we go, I want to ask you about your life now. So you went back to Cuba for the first time since you were 13 years old, sure. This past year, 2009, yep. You brought folks with you who were following you around with a camera, and so All these encounters with Septeto Banero and the vocalist Ostagia and Various people you met on the street and played music with, and friends and family whom you met there are all recorded in this documentary. Yes. It's very sweet and in many places. Now you're back.
Right.
What's it like? Do you feel the need now to go back to Cuba and recharge your batteries musically and familially and culturally and so on?
Yes. You know, I think that, and this is probably true for most anyone that's been in exile or has been away from their home and they can go back. You know, I've always said, even before I went back to Cuba, I would say that when you're Cuban, you're born with an invisible sea on your forehead. And I proved that to myself when I went back. And I know that I will eventually live there, go back to live there. In the meantime, I'm fortunate that the Cuban government really likes this DVD and is going to be entered in five festivals in Cuba.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so I'm hoping to go back there culturally, which I'll be able to do, and yes, recharge my battery and be there. And I think that the day will come, and I'll work towards that I can actually go back and live there. Exile is hard, I believe that there are several phases of punishment, and I think that the first one, of course, is capital punishment, but the second one has to be exile. It has to be. As I said in the film, and it's very true, I owe a lot to the U.S., a lot. I am who I am today because of being here, and I'm happy of who I am. But there's just something about Cuba and something about being there and something about being in your land with people that understand you so well, and a lot of different aspects, from religion to the food to just the mannerism and things of that nature that are so important. They feed your soul. And the climate, the sea air, everything, and so I think that when I get old, I'll wind up there.
And meanwhile, you're here in Santa Fe,
yeah.
Playing the music, playing with the musical group Sabor,
yes.
And you play around town, and people go to both listen and to dance.
Yes, right, absolutely, yeah. We have a lot of friends, and man, people love to come out and dance to it and revisit, and that's one of the things, you know, it's a tough thing. What do you do with all your friends, you know? If I leave, so that's why I said when I get older, because I think that right now I would love to be in Cuba, but I would hate to miss out on the friendships that I have here.
Victor Alvarez is in the film One Among Thousands, which is screening at the Jean Cocteau Theater on Montezuma Street in Santa Fe this coming Wednesday, January 13th at 7 and again at 9 o'clock. And the tickets are very inexpensive. They're available at the door. You can also get them at the Lensic, 988-1234. And the proceeds will go to an organization that you guys support, which is First Hand Aid.
First Hand Aid, yes. Those guys are tremendous. What they do is they bring medicine into Cuba, and prescription medicines and non-prescription medicines and just supplies and things of that nature, which is needed there right now. So I really want to help those guys as much as I can.
Victor Alvarez, thank you so much for being with us.
Man, what an honor. Thank you so much, Carlota.
And we're going to go out with the third phase of your Cuban music.
Thank you.
¿Dónde? ¿Dónde estabas tú? ¿Dónde? ¿Dónde estabas tú? ¿Dónde? ¿Dónde estabas tú? ¿Dónde? ¿Dónde estabas tú?
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. Podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. And if you go to santafe.radiocafe.org, you can not only hear the show, but you can post comments and tell us what you think of the program. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the colors of jazz.
No tengas
vuelven, vente,